So, Donovan, last night, you put the little guy down. Kate wants to go to bed a little early. You say, sweetie, I'm just going to go downstairs. And you set up some incense, some skulls, and you sat in the middle of this circle you'd created, and you said a prayer for Steve Nash. Is that how your evening played out late last night?
Yeah, I mean, I said to myself, okay, like, on the same like day, really, in the same news cycle, like, we had a conscious uncoupling of James Harden and the Rockets and the United States Senate and the President. Like, I think that's what happened, mm-hmm. all at the same time. And I actually thought to myself, like, we should have seen both coming, like, well in advance. I mean, in the case of Donald Trump, a lot of people saw it coming. You just need to follow Erasmus Danny and Richard Dice for all your political hot takes, and you would have seen this coming well before, I suppose, the National Guard did. But that's not really why you called me this morning. But in terms of Harden, like, so, and I actually want to get your guys' opinions on this, because you kind of see the sport not just in the micro, but in the macro. I think the greater takeaway I have from this is that, like, every Supermax player is not created equal. And the economics of the sport says, like, okay, I'm Joe Johnson. The next time I'm up, I'm kind of like superstar-ish. Like, if you look from afar and kind of squint and you look at my box numbers, you're like, okay, he's a superstar. We're going to give him a ridiculous amount of our cap and hope that we can fill around him and win. And thus, since we're spending so much on our star, we have to be right at every other position and have good health in order to compete. But, like, no, that's not true, because as much as James Harden has been an MVP as recently as a couple of years ago and has led the league in scoring 3 years in a row, like, he doesn't impact winning the way LeBron James does. In fact, we know now, with great reporting, he certainly doesn't impact a winning culture the way Stephen Curry does. And so if you're going to spend on stars who aren't really stars, Paul George, like, you have to literally get everything around them exactly right. And we know Houston certainly didn't. And what they did around him was insulate him with people that he liked. And then they either grew tired of him or he grew tired of them. And so now, I suppose, we'll see what happens with Steve Nash, oh my goodness, who has to juggle. I have two stars who, like, they're in the news this year for being in public places without a mask on, like, not for really doing something incredible on the court. You have to balance all that, but also balance the fact that if we just said, let's make a list of the three people you could roll a ball out and they could figure out a way to get a bucket, like, I think the top three are guys on that team. So how do you balance all that, but also understand that you're giving a ridiculous amount of resources to someone who hasn't proven that they alone can drag a team and a franchise into a place where they're winning at a championship level. I think the Harden experiment shows us that you got to be really, really careful when you're deciding who that 1A superstar is, because as great as James Harden is, like, a star at that level is built different. And he literally walked out of the club into quarantine, onto the court, and gave you 44-11. He is an immense talent. But the question is he good enough alone to make you a championship contender? I think we saw...
But also, DJ, and you touched on it, how toxic is this guy? You saw Boogie at the podium yesterday. You saw John Wall at the podium yesterday. And it was almost like, get him out of here. Good riddance that he's getting out of here. We don't want him around. I mean, look, you may have, as a player, your beef with the front office. You may have your issues with your playing time and your contract and how the coach is using you and whatever. But that can't trickle into the locker room. That can't get to the point where two vets, and when Boogie starts talking about disrespect, that's a problem. And then you go into a Brooklyn situation where who knows what's going on with Kyrie. KD's been puzzling over the years. And I agree with you. Kyrie hits the biggest shot in Cleveland Cavaliers history. Kevin Durant may be the best pure scorer in the NBA. Then you have Harden, who loves the ball. The issue is there's only one ball.
Right. And then, but there's also this assumption now, we're already reading and hearing about it, Donovan, that, well, KD knows James Harden from their younger days in Oklahoma City. He'll be able to keep this guy in line. I mean, how do we know that? If James Harden doesn't care in Houston, he's not going to care in Brooklyn either. He's going to be who he is and go where he goes.
Well, I mean, one thing we've learned in sports, and we certainly learned it in this market when we had Vince Carter, is that superstars don't make great general managers often. And, like, KD knew Kyrie. They came together as a package deal. And now KD can't get Kyrie to come to the arena. So, yes, certainly he knows James Harden personally, and they worked out together, you know, this summer. But that was before James Harden had his own shoe and his own team and his own MVP trophy. And so that wasn't the cute and cuddly guy who was coming off the bench, you know, being a bearded version of Manu Ginobili as a nice, impactful player, as a sixth man who you could use in closing lineups and who could score on the weak side of defense when KD got all the attention. Now James Harden is expecting all the attention with the ball in his hands, with the ability to dribble out the shot clock and then make a decision if he's willing to shoot or pass. And then where is Kyrie in the pecking order? Whenever he shows back up to work, like, he was the alpha in this situation. They all knew DeAndre Jordan, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie, that they wanted to play together since they were USA Olympic team teammates in Brazil. The only question was where. And Brooklyn was really Kyrie's choice, not KD's. Now KD is in Brooklyn without the guy who brought him there. And so we'll see. And your point is a good one, Arash, about the level of disrespect. Because you have DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall, two guys who certainly are not at James Harden's level right now, but see themselves as guys who have done a lot in this league, who are looking around and saying, excuse me, who are you to determine when and if you're going to show up and whether or not there's enough around you to win. Part of the reason why that team didn't win to the level that they should have is at the feet of James Harden. And I just think of a guy like PJ Tucker, who literally sacrificed his body, at some points his bank account, all for the benefit of hopefully winning a championship, but in many cases for the benefit of James Harden, and now you're out. And PJ Tucker, who wants more money and wants an extension, is struggling to get it, is still putting his body on the line, still playing good minutes, still shooting almost 50% from the three. So, you know, the basketball community is super, super small. And I think the level of disrespect Harden showed, forget about the franchise, those other guys, to your point, Arash, is something that is going to follow him for a little bit. And we'll see how they work it out in Brooklyn. But they gave up all of their bench and all of their defense to make this work. And really, they gave up all of their future. Like, the organization that literally, they put rules in place so that they wouldn't mortgage their future like they did with Kevin Durant, Paul Pierce, with the Celtics. They just got from under that, and they built a nice culture and a young, fun team, and they've torn it all down. Kenny Atkinson, we love you. These guys don't want you. They traded guys like LeVert, who are loved in that locker room, guys like Allen, who they really built with internal development. So now it's just these three stars for the next 8-plus years, and James Harden is 31. We'll see how long he's an impactful player. But the end of this could get ugly if they don't win in the next couple of years.
With Donovan Bennett on leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Wraps back in action tonight at, in air quotes, home in Tampa against Charlotte. 1-3 Western trip, 2-8 on the season. Pascal with the ball in his hands. Both in Golden State and Portland, neither shot fell. And Raptors lose by a point each time. So there are signs of light at the end of this early season dark tunnel. Donovan, the playoffs are obviously very much within reach. The bottom-seeded teams this early in the season have racked up some losses. The Raps are very much in reach of them. But it has not been pretty. What is your assessment of where things are at today?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm a little too harsh, but you can miss me with the moral victories. Oh, you know, we had a couple close games. We had a blowout win, and then we lost a couple games by one. Like, ultimately, like, the ills of this team aren't going anywhere. Fred VanVleet said earlier in the year, like, no one's coming in to save us. And I suppose now that James Harden is not coming, you're left maybe trying to get Bradley Beal as the only other really impactful person you can make a trade for at the deadline. Things will open up after February 6th, where some of the contracts the Raptors have recently signed would be able to be moved again. But the fact that you're getting a zero from the center position, a position that you were accustomed to winning night in and night out when you had Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, like Chris Boucher is really the only person playing winning basketball at that position. But the question is, can you start Chris Boucher and Pascal Siakam and play them extended minutes together? But speaking of Pascal Siakam, like we talked about the market inefficiency on superstars. And when they won a championship team, he was the third best player. And you're winning a championship, he's your third best player. But now they're really asking him to do something entirely different, to be their best player. And we've seen Jason Tatum take that type of a leap, mainly because you can give him the ball at the end of the game and he can close and finish. And that's the real assessment of this team is Pascal, who when he's good, he's beating you on hustle and energy, but still doesn't have a refined game and loves to spin off that left shoulder, even when that's not a counter that's necessary. He's got to prove that you can bring home ball games, or they have to just say, like, listen, this is the ceiling of the player. We now know this. And so we have to figure out who is going to be that closer, who is going to be that level A superstar and slot him in a role where he's the second or third best player on the team for us to get where we ultimately want to go. And especially when we know that the upcoming free agent class is not as appealing as it was, you know, 12 or 18 months ago. So I think this organization has a lot of questions in terms of what do you do at the deadline. Will you sell off some pieces, get that tax number down a little bit, and maybe get some future assets and some pick capital? Or are you just going to run it back out knowing that the ceiling of this team is somewhat limited given the fact that they're literally getting nothing from the center position? They don't know from night to night what they're going to get from their bench and from whom. And we're not sure if Pascal Siakam is the guy that you build everything around, or is it just a nice complementary piece as you're building.